Foundations of Morality. We have religious principles going back to ancient times. There are prohibitions against killing, hurting, stealing, and lying in all the religions I know, with exceptions for their own clergy, of course. They have other rules as well, but we can use these as a foundation. There are philosophical visions of morality, and they even teach philosophy courses in ethics. They deal in concepts of right and wrong behavior and try to boil those concepts down to basic moral propositions. I never took those courses, so I don't know the details, but I figure not killing, not hurting, not stealing, and not lying figure prominently in their vision of good behavior. There is a historical thread of liberty that started in 1215 with the Magna Carta and reached a glorious conclusion in the Constitution of the United States of America. Its visionaries include John Locke, Adam Smith, and our own Thomas Jefferson. There is the experience of history. Societies that have lived well have lived by certain principles, and those that have eschewed those principles have been worse off. This is where my viewpoints are derived from, but there's a subtle line between short-term reaction and long-term learning. My political opponents say there is some situation that requires action to do the right thing in the short term. I reject that view as being short-sighted, while I embrace my views as doing good in a longer time frame. How do we discriminate between the short-term expediency that begets evil and the long-term principles that create good things like prosperity and freedom? The answer relies on judgment, not the easiest virtue to cultivate, and I rely on two things to defend mine. First, I'm a smart person who knows enough to tell the difference. And second, the timescales of weeks and centuries are so different that it doesn't require a fine line to discriminate between them. One of the tactics of my political opponents is to create a long-term vision of crisis like eugenics or global warming precisely to circumvent the principle of long-term vision versus short-term expedience. The tool I use to see past their deception is to note that these fake long-term crises seem to be short-lived and continuously revised, while the real long-term values persist for centuries. Many of these ethical foundations rely on some concept of what is good. So let's define what we think of as politically good. More specifically, I'm going to define what I think of as politically good. I want to feel safe and free. I want to choose the things I want to have in my life, and I want to be financially able to have those things. I want to be able to earn a living and to keep the fruits of my labor. I want those who make promises to keep them. I want good, cheap, available health care and education. I want to choose the people in my life. I want to be treated for who I am and what I do rather than what I look like or where I come from. I realize I can't have all these things. Maybe nobody can ever have all these things, but these are social political things I classify as good. How do we turn I want, I want, I want into a political statement of what is good? Life, liberty, and safety are relatively easy concepts to grasp. Being able to keep my own stuff is still pretty easy to understand, although it gets harder with intellectual and artistic property. Choice of association and freedom from discrimination are yet more difficult. Methinks economic goodness is the toughest to quantify, so let me take a stab at it. If we take all the people in some community of interest and line them up from poorest to richest by their economic success level, then we can take the level 1/10 of the way from poorest to richest. In my mathematical world, we call that the 10th percentile. A similar metric would be measuring economic success of the top half of the bottom fifth. Almost everybody strongly rejects the statistical arithmetic mean as one billionaire and 999 paupers falsely average out to a society of millionaires. The median is more satisfying, but I can imagine a community that takes good care of its middle third and leaves its poor without opportunity. The first percentile, essentially measuring the members worst off, has the frustration that every society has a few lazy slackers who choose poverty over even minimal effort. I do believe at least 90% of the population will take advantage of opportunity if it exists. Also, we can choose income or family net worth or something similar as economic measures of success. It's actually academic as the good economic political communities have historically done better at every level of the economic scale with any measure than their bad economic contemporaries. To put this into perspective, the median net family worth in the USA halved during the 8 years, 2007 to 2014, when the Obama, Hillary, Bernie-style Democrats were in control. It's hard to imagine any way that could have happened other than devastating destruction of our economy during that time with horrifying financial impact on our poorer members. Another moral foundation is simply to imitate good societies. Monkey see, monkey do. While it may be simplistic simply to copy without understanding, there's a great deal of mileage to be gained following that road. There are books on the seven habits of highly effective people promoting the notion that acting like people we'd like to be makes us more like them. We can add historical perspective to make dramatic comparisons between vastly different societies like the United States of America and Europe from 1901 to 1950, comparing our freedom to Stalin's Russia and Hitler's Germany. Care must be taken to avoid associating mitigating circumstance with moral success, as Rome did better than Pompeii in the year 79, but not because of their superior moral code. We can derive social and economic consequences from moral principles, as I believe people like John Locke, Adam Smith, and Thomas Jefferson did. It's a little tentative projecting economic consequences from ethical principles of behavior, maybe a lot tentative, so I support my utilitarian comfort in good values with normative and historical arguments. Finally, there's the normative view relying on principles of decency. In Bonfire of the Vanities, John Leonard White says, "Decency is not a deal. It isn't an angle or a contract or a hustle. Decency is what your grandmother taught you. It's in your bones." The trouble is, it isn't in our bones, not for all of us, and not all our grandmothers knew or had a chance to teach us decency. As an analogy, I remember one attempt to teach punctuation by telling primary school children to put commas where they paused in speech. Those of us educated in grammar tend to pause where we put commas because we learned that way. But the kids being desperately taught this Hail Mary method of punctuation had no such advantage and used commas in some of the darndest places. I believe telling people to do right because they feel right is similarly fraught with peril. But I do believe we can accept certain principles as right without a whole lot of justification and to go with it. It may seem I've spent a lot of verbiage on foundations of moral principles we're going to accept anyway. Since I'm hoping to base a political system that can create and destroy human prosperity and dignity on a vast scale, I feel we should understand how that system should be founded.